Frank didn't really want to give Laura Flynn the details of the tragic scene he and Horn had discovered on the trail between the Lazy F and San Remo, but she was insistent. Anyway, the men who had been ambushed were her riders and had been following her orders when they were killed. She deserved to hear the truth about what had happened to them.
Then it really is my fault that they're all dead.
Laura and Frank sat in the parlor of the ranch house with the still unconscious Jeff Buxton.
Some people might blame you, but they'd be wrong. Whenever something bad happens, some folks are always quick to jump on whoever it happened to and try to claim that it was their own fault, that they brought whatever it was on their own heads. But that lets the varmints who actually did the bad thing off the hook. Nobody forced Riley and the rest of Sandine's men to pull the triggers on their guns. They made that choice all on their own. When somebody does something evil and folks say it's not their fault and try to blame the victim, well, that's just crazy.
I don't know if you're trying to make me feel better or not, Mr. Morgan, but I appreciate your kind words. I'll always carry the deaths of those men in my heart.
It's all right to mourn them, but when you get done with that, it's time to strike back at the evil bastards who are really responsible.
Yes, I can see that. But you said we can't take the fight to Sandine, that we don't have enough men.
I've been thinking about that. How attached are you to this place?
The Lazy F, you mean? Why, it's become my home. And it was my uncle's home for 30 years, too. So that means something to me as well.
I'm not talking about the ranch itself. I mean this house, the barns and corrals and smokehouse, all things like that.
Well, of course the ranch house itself means a great deal to me because of Uncle Howard, but if something ever happened to it, I suppose it could be rebuilt. Exactly what do you have in mind, Mr. Morgan?
Frank glanced out the window at the yard in front of the house. The light was fading now. In another hour, it would be dark outside. And not long after dark had fallen, Sandine would strike. Frank was convinced of that.
We're easy targets here. Sandine will have us outnumbered probably 4-1. And there's no guarantee that Horn will get back from San Remo with a posse in time to help. In fact, we don't know for sure if he'll even be able to raise a posse.
I think he will. Uncle Howard was well-liked in the settlement, and people are starting to understand just what sort of man Ed Sandine really is.
That's true, but you still can't count on folks picking up a gun and risking their own life until they actually do it.
Then what do you suggest?
If we got out of here, along with the men you have left, we could hit Sandine from behind when he attacks a place. The odds would still be against us, but at least we'd have the element of surprise on our side. We'd be able to move around, too, instead of being pinned down in the buildings.
Would that be enough to make a difference?
You never know until you try. Besides, I don't like just sitting and waiting for trouble.
No, you'd rather go out and stir it up. I'm no strategist, Mr. Morgan, but I liked the sound of your plan. As far as I'm concerned, there's only one thing wrong with it.
What's that?
I can't leave. Mr. Buxton is still unconscious, and he shouldn't be moved until he wakes up. We can't risk injuring him even more, and I won't leave him.
Frank frowned. That was a problem, all right.
When Sandine gets here, if he finds a place deserted, he's liable to torch all the buildings. That's why I asked how attached you were to them. And if you're here, he'll take you and use you as the hostage to get what he wants.
Then it will be up to you and the rest of the men to see that he doesn't get the chance to do any of those things, won't it?
I guess so.
Laura reached over and touched the butt of the gun that lay on a small table beside her.
Besides, I'm armed. Ed Sandine won't take me without a fight. Or should I do as I've heard the women did in the days of the Apache raids and save the last bullet for myself?
I wouldn't go that far. Sandine's pretty bad, but he's not an Apache. Besides, no matter what happens tonight, his days are numbered. I imagine Tom Horn has already sent word to Sheriff O'Neill about what's been going on in these parts. Sooner or later, the law will stop Sandine, even if we don't.
All right. I'm in agreement with your plan, as long as you agree that I stay here with Mr. Buxton. I'll keep AC Ducey with me, too. He wouldn't be of much help to you in a running gun battle.
I'll fetch the other men and let you talk to them. I got a hunch. They won't take orders from me unless you tell them to.
Of course. I'll make sure they understand what they're to do.
Frank waited until the shadows of dusk had gathered and thickened even more before he slipped out of the house and began making his way around the remaining outbuildings of the Lazy F headquarters, passing the word to the men who were forted up inside them that they were to gather in the main house so that Miss Laura could talk to them. They cooperated, although some of them were a little reluctant and obviously still distrustful of Frank. They had lingering doubts about whether he was responsible for Howard Flynn's death. Frank was cautious about moving around in the open and warned the punchers to do likewise, because it was possible that Sandine had a man up in the hills watching the ranch through field glasses. In order for his plan to be effective, he and the Lazy F crew had to leave headquarters without Sandine being aware of what they were doing. All the lamps had been blown out in the house, and one by one, the men slipped in and gathered in the parlor. In the gloom of the parlor, Frank made a head count and found that he had 14 men at his disposal. Several of them were wounded, but swore they could ride and hold up their end in a fight. He had no choice but to believe them. Laura told them the plan.
You'll take orders from Mr. Morgan. He's the most experienced at this sort of thing.
How do we know this Morgan fella's telling the truth? He's a gunfighter, just like the polecats who ride for Sandine. And I still ain't sure he didn't gun down the boss.
I'm sure, and those are my orders. However, I'm not going to order any man to go along who doesn't want to. You can draw your time and ride out right now, and chances are you'll be well away from here before Sandine attacks. The choice is up to all of you.
Oh, heck, Miss Laura, I didn't say nothing about drawing my time. There's going to be a fight. I sure don't want to miss all the fun.
All of the ranch hands were going to stick, just as Frank had thought they would.
All right, then. I'll turn things over to Mr. Morgan.
Thanks.
Frank faced the men. He couldn't see them very well in the shadows, but he could sense their rapt attention.
We need to move fast, but we can't rush things and get careless. One by one, saddle your horses and lead them away from here, but don't mount up just yet. Move as quietly as you can, and don't light any lamps or even strike a lucifer to light a quirly. We need a place to rendezvous. You boys know the country around here better than I do. Any suggestions?
Oh, there's Bald Knob about a mile and a half north of here. I reckon we all know where it is and can find it in the dark.
That'll do. I remember seeing it when I was looking over the range, so I can find it too. We'll drift up there, and as soon as we're all together, we'll circle around so we can guard the trail from Saber that leads up here. If Sandine and his men ride by, we'll let him go and give him a little lead before we fall in behind him. When the trouble starts, we'll hit him from the rear, just as hard and fast as we can. If luck is with us, we'll drop enough of them fast enough to get the odds up a little.
I don't much like leaving Miss Laura here with just the cook and Buck.
That's my decision to make. Mr. Buxton can't be moved. And besides, the place has to look like someone is here, doesn't it, Mr. Morgan? That will draw Sandine in and make him concentrate his attention on the house instead of what might be behind him.
That's good thinking. Once we're all gone, have AC Ducey light some of the lamps in here. As if it's a normal evening on the Lazy F.
As if anything around here will ever be truly normal again.
You never know. As long as there's hope to hang on to, anything can happen. We'll see how things play out tonight.
Yes, of course. Before you go, I just wanted to say thank you for everything you've done. And for sticking by me. I know it can't be easy working for a woman.
Oh, you ain't just a woman, Miss Laura. You're Howard Flynn's niece. You're the boss of the Lazy F now, and we ride for the brand, by God.
Let's go. Remember what I told you. Move quick. But make sure nobody sees you either if Sandine has watchers posted.
It was an even bet whether or not they could actually get away from the ranch without Sandine being aware of it and turn the tables on the rogue cattlemen. But it was the best chance they had, and the odds would still be against them. But not if Tom Horn was able to bring help from San Remo and reached the Lazy F in time. Frank knew it was a long shot, but if a posse hit Sandine's raiders from one direction, while Frank and the punchers were attacking from another, like he had told Laura Flynn, as long as there was hope to cling to, anything could happen. In his lifetime, Mitch Kite had spent plenty of time in a saddle, often fleeing at a gallop from a posse or an outraged husband or a vengeful relative. But it had been quite a while since he had ridden this hard and fast, and the pace was taking a painful toll on his body. Clearly, living the life of a saloon keeper had softened him up some. but he made a lot better time than a bunch of townies from San Remo would. And it was only dusk when he rode up to the hacienda at Sabre. He saw right away that something was going on. Men were leading saddle horses out of the barns and corrals, and other men were standing around checking the loads in their rifles and six guns. A grim but anticipatory atmosphere hung over the place. Sandine was getting ready to go to war. A stocky, bearded hardcase named Devereaux was standing in the open wrought iron gate that led into the big house's courtyard.
Where's Sandine?
Right here.
The answer came from inside the courtyard, and Sandine himself strode past Devereaux, followed by the dapper and deadly Vern Riley.
What the hell are you doing here, Kite?
Sandine was wearing range clothes instead of his usual suit, and a gun belt and a holstered six gun were strapped around his waist.
You ought to be in San Remo looking after my saloon.
You may not have a saloon come morning if you don't listen to me, Ed.
Kite suppressed the flare of anger he felt at Sandine's contemptuous tone of voice. Sandine might be the big skookum he-wolf around these parts now, but once upon a time, Mitch Kite had been a man to stand aside from, too.
The law is on to what you're doing.
What the devil are you talking about? What law?
Bucky O'Neill sent a special deputy in to poke around when he heard rumors about a range war up here. It's that fella Tom Horn.
Horn? Hell, he's not much better than an outlaw himself.
Well, maybe not, but right now he's wearing a badge. And it gets worse. He met up with Frank Morgan, and he believes Morgan's story about him not killing Howard Flynn.
Kite looked at Riley.
You got lucky Morgan came along when he did that day, Vern, so you could pin the killing on him. But luck doesn't always last.
Damn it! Morgan was the one who was really lucky that day. He was the one I planned to bushwhack after I circled around and got ahead of him. But then Flynn came riding along, and I thought, psh, why the hell not?
And you acted without my orders when you killed him, too.
You didn't seem to mind when Flynn was dead and it looked like Morgan was going to get the blame.
None of that matters now. Morgan and Horn have teamed up. They found those lazy F-punchers you and the boys wiped out, Vern.
A dead man can't talk.
Yeah, but that darky Glover isn't dead.
What? You told me...
Hell, he was shot and the wagon turned over on him. How the hell was I supposed to know?
You could have ridden down there and put some more bullets in him to be sure.
Horn heard Glover say that he saw you among the bushwhackers, Vern. That means the law will be coming after you, Ed.
No one can prove I ordered that ambush. Any more than Morgan could prove that I sent Lanigan after him. I can always claim that Vern acted on his own.
Throw me to the wolves, you mean? The hell you will! If it comes down to it, I'll tell the law everything about you, Sandine, about all those banks you robbed back in Kansas and those trains you held up and those killings in Montana.
A thin line of smoke drifted from the barrel of the gun that Kite had just drawn from under his jacket. Riley was driven backward against the adobe wall by the slug that tore into his chest. He tried to lift his shotgun. The bullets made Riley bounce off the wall and pitch forward on his face, dropping the scattergun as he fell. He kicked once and then lay still.
Damn fool. He should have known better than to threaten to spill his guts to the law.
Sandine gave Kite a curt nod.
Good work, Mitch. You saved me the trouble of killing him.
I knew that's what you'd want.
I'm glad you're here. You'll ride with us tonight against the Lazy F.
You're going through with the attack on the ranch? You can't, Ed. You still don't know the whole story. Horn's gathered up a posse to take out there from San Remo.
You think I give a damn about that? I'm not worried about 8 or 10 of those piddling townies. It won't be enough to make a difference. I'd be surprised if Laura Flynn has more than a dozen able-bodied men left to defend the place. Throw in that so-called posse, and it's still not enough to keep me from taking what I want.
But you don't have to. Riley's dead. He was the only direct link between you and that ambush. Without him, the law can't prove anything. You can just deny everything and sit back and wait. Lazy F's not going anywhere. You can always get control of it later, after things have quieted down some.
You don't understand, Mitch. I've never been a man who likes to wait. When I see something I want, I take it, then and there. I let Howard Flynn and that niece of his get away with too much for too long. The Lazy F is the best range around here, so it's mine by right. And so will the rest of the Muggy on Rim country be mine before I'm through?
Kite stared at him. Blinded by ambition and arrogance, Sandine had lost his mind. And Kite suddenly found himself wondering if the man had been insane all along, just holding it in check.
You're making a mistake, Ed. I'm going back to San Remo.
Are you turning on me too, Mitch?
He hadn't even seen Sandine draw, but the gun in his hand was rock steady.
Kike didn't doubt for a second that Sandine would use it either. No, Ed, I'm not turning on you. I'm with you. You know that. I'll back your play all the way.
I thought so.
Sandine lowered the hammer and leathered the iron.
We'll be ready to ride in a few minutes. Just think, Mitch. By morning, the Lazy F will be mine. And that's just the beginning. I'm gonna rule this whole part of the territory like it was my own private kingdom. And who knows? Maybe someday you'll be working for Governor Sandine. Or even Senator Sandine. Ha ha ha! Nobody can stop me now!
Kite wiped the back of his hand across his mouth. Crazy or not, he hoped Sandine was right. But with a sick feeling in the pit of his stomach, Kite told himself that Sandine had forgotten all about the man called the Drifter. Tom Horn gritted his teeth to hold back impatient, frustrated curses. The citizens of San Remo meant well, and he supposed they were better than no posse at all, but they were damn sure slow as molasses in January. It had taken them what seemed like forever to fetch their guns, saddle their horses, mount up, and move out. Now that they were finally riding toward the Lazy F, they still weren't hustling along fast enough to suit Horn. The sun was already down, and night was falling rapidly. At this rate, they wouldn't reach the Flynn Ranch until an hour or more after dark. Depending on how impatient Sandine was, that might be too late to do any good. But no matter what happened tonight, the jig was up for Mr. Ed Sandine. Before leaving San Remo, Horn had written out a note for Sheriff Bucky O'Neill and sent the Mexican saddlemaker's oldest boy galloping off to Prescott with it. The youngster would get there sometime the next morning, and by the end of the next day, O'Neill would probably reach San Remo with a real posse. Even if Sandine succeeded in grabbing the Lazy F tonight, he wouldn't have it for long. Jasper Culverhouse and Mayor Donahue flanked Horn. The big wolf-like cur loped alongside Culverhouse's horse. As Horn had suspected, the dog belonged to Frank Morgan, and Culverhouse figured he would want to come along for the fun. Trailing along behind the three men were eight more: Wilson and Desmond, the two storekeepers, Hightower, McCain, and Williams, who owned the three saloons in San Remo that Sandine didn't own, Vincente Delgado, the saddle maker, and Pearsall and Higgins, who worked as bartenders for Hightower and McCain, respectively. They all seemed like good men, brave enough, and like all frontiersmen, they knew at least a little about handling guns. But none of them had ever been part of a fight like this. None of them would be a match for even the least skilled of Sandine's hard cases and gun throwers. But the country had a history of common men banding together and going out to oppose evil, Horn reminded himself. It was a tradition that went back over 100 years, back to the days of the Revolution that had freed the colonies from England's despotic grip. And hadn't the Texans ultimately defeated the much larger army fielded by that Mexican dictator, Santa Anna? Time and again, Americans had taken up arms against seemingly impossible odds and somehow emerged triumphant. Maybe all it meant was that sometimes El Señor Dios smiled on courageous fools. That might be enough.
How much longer will it take us to get there?
Half an hour, maybe. That's just a guess, though. I ain't as familiar with this part of the country as I am with some others.
Sounds right to me. What do we do when we get there?
Well, if everything's peaceful, we ride in and add our numbers to those defending the place. If it ain't, if the ruckus is already going on, I reckon we'll figure that out when the time comes.
I'd give a lot for a shot at Ed Sandine. He sure caused plenty of trouble in these parts.
Better be careful what you wish for, Mayor. Before the night's over, you might just get it.
Frank found the Bald Knob without any trouble. The moon was rising, and it made the rocky knoll shine a little in the night, like the hairless skull of an old man. He had been the last to leave the Lazy F, waiting until the cowboys had slipped away one by one, almost as quietly as Apaches. Standing in the open door of the darkened house, in the shadows of the porch, he had listened intently, but he hadn't heard any hoofbeats. That had brought a satisfied nod from him. The men had done as he told them and waited until they were out of earshot of the house to mount up and ride toward the rendezvous point. All he could do was hope that if Sandine had any watchers posted nearby, they were unaware of the men leaving the ranch headquarters. Before taking his own leave of the house, Frank had talked with Laura.
Are you sure you want to stay here?
I'm certain. I have a feeling that Mr. Buxton is going to wake up soon, and I want to be here when he does.
All right. Maybe next time we see each other, this'll all be over.
I'm sorry I misjudged you, Mr. Morgan. And I'm awfully glad you're really on my side.
Now, as he approached the Bald Knob, Frank recalled the warmth and strength he had felt in Laura Flynn's slender body as he briefly returned that hug, and he thought that Jeff Buxton was a lucky man. At least, he would be, if he ever woke up from that bullet crease on his head. Frank had reached the agreed-upon spot, and a moment later, more than a dozen riders emerged from the shadows under the trees at the base of the knoll and came toward him.
Everybody accounted for?
Yeah, we're all here. What do we do now, Morgan?
We'll swing around to the east, over close to the rim, and circle back toward the trail between Saber and the Lazy F. If one of you boys who knows this range better than I do wants to lead the way, that'd be just fine with me.
Well, I can do it. I grew up around here. I reckon I know just about every foot of the range.
Good. We'll follow you. Now let's get moving.
The group rode out, the young puncher taking the lead, as Frank had suggested. Frank had never been the sort of man to be bothered by uncertainty. He was in the habit of sizing up a situation the best he could, deciding on a course of action, and then following that course without looking back or brooding about what else he might have done. But he had to admit that he was a mite nervous tonight. There were too many things going on that he couldn't control, too many groups moving around in the night, too many hands that could play out differently than he expected. It was almost like sitting down at a poker table blindfolded and trying to figure out what cards you had by feeling them. That was fine if the cards were marked, but if they weren't, and if you were gambling with people's lives, even the iciest nerves would twinge a little under those circumstances. The young cowboy did indeed seem to know where he was going. He led the group almost into the dark shadow of the Mogollon Rim, then turned back to the west and rode hard. The others kept up with him. And about a half an hour later, he drew his mount to a stop on top of a thickly wooded ridge.
Down yonder's a trail.
That's how Sandine will get to the Lazy F?
Well, I reckon he could always go some other way, but that's the quickest and easiest trail to follow.
Frank nodded. He leaned forward in the saddle, some instinct warning him that not everything was as it should be. Something was wrong, and it took him a moment to realize what it was.
Dust. There's dust hanging in the air. Bunch of horses went by here not too long ago.
Sandine and his men have already ridden past. We have to head for the Lazy F.
Wait a minute. What if we're wrong, Morgan? What if somebody else kicked up that dust? You want us to surprise Sandine, and now you're maybe throwing that edge away.
Frank knew the man was right. He was gambling again, staking lives on the turn of an unseen card. But he knew from experience to trust his hunches in both poker and life, and he knew that Sandine's raiders had already ridden past on their deadly mission.
I'm heading for the Lazy F. Yeah!
Frank didn't ask who was with him, and he didn't look back to see if any of the cowboys were following. He would take on Sandine by himself if he had to. Then he heard the hoofbeats behind him and knew they were coming with him. He reached the trail, turned north, and urged Stormy into a ground-eating lope. They might not have any time to waste. When Frank heard the gunfire, he knew that time was up. After Frank Morgan and all the other men were gone, AC Ducey went about the house lighting all the lamps, making it look as though everyone were home. Over the next few minutes, a warm glow began to fill the sprawling ranch house as AC Ducey lit several lamps. In the parlor, Laura studied Buxton's haggard face. His skin was so pale that his dark mustache and the beard stubble that had grown over the past couple of days stood out starkly. He was not really what one would call a handsome man, even under the best of circumstances, Laura reflected. His features were too rough-hewn for that. And yet, when he smiled, she always thought he was very handsome, probably because that was when his gentle nature was the easiest to see in his eyes. The poet said that the eyes were the windows of the soul, and Jeff Buxton had a good soul, Laura thought. She looked at his eyes that were open. Laura leaned toward him and peered down into his eyes. She hadn't even noticed him opening them, but she wasn't imagining it.
Jeff? Jeff!
Buxton blinked vacantly, and for a horrible second, she thought he wasn't right in the head, that he didn't know her and would never be the same again. But then his unsteady gaze fastened on her, and she saw awareness blossoming there. Awareness and memory and all the things that made him who he was.
Laura?
Laura slid from the rocking chair and fell to her knees beside the divan, clutching his shoulders, but being careful not to jostle him too much as she leaned over him.
Jeff, you know who I am. You're all right!
Sure I know who you are, and I reckon I'm all right. Except my head hurts, like I got kicked by a Missouri mule.
Tears of relief and love fell from her eyes to land on his lean, grizzled cheeks. Laura bent over him and brushed her lips gently against his.
Oh, my darling, I thought I had lost you.
Nope, I'm still here. But where's Sandine?
Don't even think about that. You've been hurt and you need to rest.
Feel like I've been resting for a long time.
Buxton lifted a hand and shakily reached toward his head.
What's this?
There's a bandage around your head. A bullet grazed you and knocked you out.
For how long? Those masked bastards?
They're gone. That was last night. You've been unconscious for almost 24 hours.
That's a long nap.
Buxton raised his arm again, but this time he slipped it around her and brought her down so that her head rested on his chest as she leaned over the divan.
Pardon me for being forward. Just feel like I want to hold you for a spell.
That's all right. You can hold me for as long as you want. Forever, if you want.
But even as Laura wept for joy at the fact that she hadn't lost him after all, she remembered the deadly threat that loomed over the Lazy F tonight. Surely she hadn't had the man she loved return to her, only to have everything snatched away again by Ed Sandine. Without lifting her head from Buxton's chest, her eyes went to the gun lying on the table next to the divan. If Sandine were to step into the room right now, she would kill him. She had no doubts about her ability to pick up that gun and empty every bullet in its cylinder into Sandine's brutal, arrogant face. Just let him try to take away what she had been given. As that thought went through her head, she caught her breath. Laura knew what the gunfire meant. The showdown, the final battle in this short-lived range war, had begun. Sandine had sent one of his hired gunmen, a former cavalry captain named Lawton, who had been drummed out of the service for drunkenness and graft, to keep an eye on the Lazy F. He wanted to know what sort of odds he would be facing when he got there. Not that it would really matter. Sandine knew he was destined to emerge victorious. He could feel it in his bones. Kite wasn't so certain of that, but he felt a little better when Lawton rode in to report that the dozen or so ranch hands left on the Lazy F were still forted up in the remaining outbuildings.
I've been watching all afternoon and evening just like you told me to, Mr. Sandine. Nobody's moving around down there. They probably hold up thinking about how they're going to die.
What about the main house?
Well, I spotted the girl and that chink cook through my field glasses. Wasn't sure what was going on at first because they didn't light the lamps right away when it got dark, but they did a little while later. Saving the coal oil, maybe. Like that's going to matter.
Uneasiness crawled along Kite's spine. It seemed to him that something wasn't quite right here, but he had to admit that from the sound of it, the Lazy F was ripe for the plucking. Sandine and his army of more than 40 gunslingers could ride in there, kill the few defenders, and take over the ranch house. Then, with Laura Flynn in his power, Sandine could insist that he was just protecting her and her ranch from rustlers and outsiders. Nobody would really believe that, but who could prove otherwise in a court of law, especially if the girl went along with the story? Which she would have to if she wanted to live. Through sheer boldness, Sandine might just win. And if he did, like he said, there would be no stopping him.
There may be a posse on its way from San Remo. Any sign of it?
Nope. You don't got a thing to worry about, boss. Just ride in and take over.
Sandine lifted his reins. His lips pulled back from his teeth in a triumphant grin.
That's exactly what I'm gonna do.
Sandine heeled his horse into a walk and started down the slope toward the ranch house. In the moonlight, he was making himself a clear target for any rifleman who wanted to draw a bead on him. But just as clearly, he didn't care about that. He wasn't worried. An air of supreme confidence hung over him. Like a conquering general with his army right behind him, he rode down the hill. And from the west, with a swift, sudden rataplan of hoofbeats, riders swept toward Sandine and his men, the guns in their hands spouting flame. Sandine whirled his horse, saw the small number of men attacking him and his forces, and knew that the posse from San Remo had arrived. But they could be destroyed as easily as anyone else who dared to oppose him.
Damn.
Horn saw the imperious rider high-stepping his horse down the hill toward the Lazy F headquarters. Even though he had never seen Ed Sandeen before, there was no doubt in his mind that he was looking at the former outlaw and rogue cattleman. Accompanied by a small army of gunfighters, Sandeen had come to claim what he thought of as his rightful prize. And Horn had less than a dozen inexperienced townies to stop him. It would have been easy at that moment to turn and ride away. Horn even considered the idea. For about 2 seconds. He knew he had a growing reputation as an amoral bastard, but there had been a time when he was an honorable man, and for damn sure nobody had ever accused him of being a coward. He just wished he was a little better with a shotgun. He drew his pistol anyway and looked over his shoulder at the tense faces of his unofficial posse.
Let's go!
Thankfully, he wasn't charging Sandeen alone, as he had worried for an instant that he might be. More shots blasted as the men from San Remo spread out in a line and galloped toward the gunmen on the hillside. Horn kept his eyes fixed on Sandeen and rode straight toward him, holding his fire for the moment until he got closer. If he could kill Sandeen, the rest of that murderous gun crew might not be inclined to fight quite so hard. Suddenly, Horn felt a shiver go through his horse as a bullet butted into the animal's body. Horn was catapulted into the air. Only the fact that he had instinctively kicked his feet free from the stirrups as soon as the horse was hit saved him from having the dying animal roll over on him. Instead, he slammed into the ground several feet in front of the horse, losing his hat to the impact. Horn rolled over and came to his knees. Somehow, he managed to hang onto the revolver in his hand. It might not do him much good, though, because as his eyes widened, he stared at the line of killers charging toward him, flame geysering from the muzzles of their guns. Horn jerked up his gun. Buxton tried to struggle up from the divan as he heard the shooting, too.
What?
Laura held him down.
Stay there, Jeff. You are in no shape to fight.
Damn it, Laura!
Laura was right. His strength deserted him, and he sagged back against the cushions, weak as a kitten, his head spinning madly. Laura stood up and lunged toward the table that held the lamp. She extinguished the flame and plunged the parlor into darkness. She didn't want the two of them showing up as plain targets through the front windows. Spinning back toward the divan, she picked up the gun and crouched beside Buxton, ready to fight if need be. His hand reached out in the darkness and brushed her sleeve.
Laura, is it Sandeen?
That's right. He's come to take the ranch, but he's not going to do it. He's not.
As Laura waited there, she slipped her injured arm out of the sling.
Ah.
It was still stiff and sore, but she could use it. She stripped the sling from around her neck and then wrapped both hands around the colt.
Come on, Sandeen. Just try to come in here, you son of a bitch.
Stormy stretched his legs and pulled ahead of the horses ridden by the Lazy F punchers. They trailed well behind Frank as he and the Appaloosa almost flew over the trail. It wasn't far to the ranch, but the shooting was fierce, and he didn't know for sure what was happening. His best guess was that Horn had made it back from San Remo with a posse and gotten to the Lazy F just about the same time as Sandeen. But the chances were that Horn and his companions would be heavily outnumbered, and Sandine's men might wipe them out in pretty short order, unless Frank and his bunch got there in time to turn the tide of battle. Just as on the previous night, Frank raced through the trees and came out on the ridge overlooking the ranch. In the wash of silvery moonlight, he saw the gang of killers that had been bound for the Lazy F. Those gunmen, led by Ed Sandeen, had swung toward their left flank to meet the charge of a much smaller group. That would be Horn and the men from San Remo, Frank thought, as he galloped down the hill. He looked for the special deputy, but he didn't see him. Then, his eyes were drawn to the fallen horse and the man kneeling on the ground nearby, gun in hand spouting orange flame as he fired at the charging killers. Frank recognized Horn and knew the man had only seconds to live unless something distracted Sandine's men.
Come and get me, you bastards!
Riders reined in and whirled their horses to meet this new threat. Frank plunged straight into the heart of chaos.
Ha ha! It's Morgan!
Sandeen saw the lone rider racing toward them from the rear, snapping off shots as he came.
But he's by himself, the damn fool!
Sandeen forgot about the posse from San Remo for the moment as he jerked his mount around. They could be dealt with easily. It was that bastard Morgan he wanted. And if Morgan was crazy enough to attack by himself...
Wait!
Mitch Kite rode beside Sandeen. He reached out to grab his boss's arm.
Look up there!
More riders had just topped the hill and now began to gallop down the slope toward the ranch headquarters. Sandine had no idea who these newcomers were, but he realized that their identity didn't really matter. What was important was that suddenly, he and his men were caught between two opposing forces, and they were being raked by a deadly crossfire. They might still outnumber the ranch's defenders, but their position was no longer nearly as strong as it had been only moments earlier. There was only one answer. Power lay in the ranch house. Whoever captured it was going to win this battle, because that was where Laura Flynn was, and with Laura in his hands, the Lazy F men would have no choice but to surrender. Sandine whirled his horse yet again and cruelly jabbed his spurs in its flanks.
Come on! Let's get to the house!
Trailed by several of the gunmen, they headed for the Lazy F ranch house. All of a sudden, Tom Horn wasn't facing the charging killers by himself anymore. The members of the posse caught up to him and swung down from their saddles to form a skirmish line. Horn came to his feet, flanked once again by Culverhouse and Donahue, and added his shots to the volley after volley ripping out from the men of San Remo. The storm of lead scythed through Sandine's men and knocked several of them from their saddles. The Lazy F punchers slammed into Sandine's force from the rear. Sandine's army was split, trying to cope with danger from two directions at once, and as more and more of them fell, the odds drew closer to even. Frank spotted Sandine and several other men making for the house and gave chase. He knew that Laura, Buxton, and AC Ducey were probably still in there. Despite the fact that Sandine's men were disorganized and perhaps fighting a losing battle, everything could change in the blink of an eye if Sandine got his hands on Laura Flynn and used her as a hostage. Frank had to prevent that. Stormy leaped through the hellish fighting, hooves barely touching the ground. Frank leaned forward over the Appaloosa's neck.
Sandine!
A couple of the rogue cattleman's companions whirled around, but Sandine kept going. Frank recognized Mitch Kite, who ran the Verde Saloon in town for Sandine. Frank lifted his Colt. Then Frank and Stormy flashed past Kite. Another of Sandine's men took Frank by surprise by jerking his horse directly into Stormy's path. The Appaloosa tried to dart nimbly aside, but there wasn't time or room to completely avoid a collision. Frank tumbled from the saddle and rolled across the ground, coming to a stop on his stomach. Bullets kicked up dirt as they thudded into the ranch yard only inches away from him. He tipped up the barrel of his gun. Both of the other men who had been with Sandine jerked under the impact of the well-placed bullets and pitched from their saddles. Frank scrambled up, biting back a curse as he saw that Sandine's horse was at the porch of the ranch house, its saddle empty. That meant Sandine had to be inside. As he ran toward the house, Frank thumbed fresh cartridges into his empty revolver. Laura brought up the gun as the figure loomed menacingly in the doorway. She was ready to pull the trigger, but at the last second, her resolve betrayed her. She couldn't see the man's face and suddenly realized she didn't know for certain who he was. She might be about to shoot a friend, perhaps even Frank Morgan.
Stop! Don't move!
The gun flew out of her hands as she fell to her knees.
You damn bitch! I would have given you everything! Now, because of you, I have to take what I want!
On the divan, Jeff Buxton forced himself to roll onto his side, even though his limp muscles still didn't want to work, and agony pounded through his skull, and the world spun crazily around him. He thought he had heard something strike the floor beside the divan, and instinct made him reach down with a shaking hand and search for whatever it was. His fingers brushed something smooth. He realized a second later it was the walnut butt of the gun Laura had been holding. Buxton glanced toward the spot where she had fallen when Sandine struck her. Sandine still loomed over her, reaching for her with one hand while the other held a gun. Buxton found the strength somewhere deep inside him to close his hand around the Colt and lift it. He swung the barrel toward the two figures across the room. Sandine had hold of Laura now.
Sandine!
Sandine froze for a second, then viciously shoved Laura away from him.
Buxton? Well, you're still alive, you bastard?
The gun in Sandine's hand started to come up.
I'm gonna enjoy this.
So am I.
Frank bounded onto the porch as the echoes of the shot fired inside the house died away. He came to a tense stop there at the top of the steps as a dark figure loomed in the front door. The man stepped forward, gun in hand, and as he came into the slanting moonlight, Frank recognized Ed Sandine. Sandine's shot missed, but Frank's bullet crashed into the man's body and drove him backward. Frank's brain caught up to his instincts then, and he realized that there had already been a dark stain on the breast of Sandine's shirt before he pulled the trigger. Sandine was already wounded, maybe even dying, but sheer hatred had driven him on to take one last shot at the drifter. But now Sandine lay on his back in the doorway, his gun slipping from limp, nerveless fingers at his side. The threat that he represented to the Mogollon Rim country now at an end.
Mr. Morgan! Mr. Morgan, is that you? Look out for Sandine!
No need.
Frank stepped over the corpse in the doorway.
He's dead. You all right?
The match lit up the room. Frank saw Laura standing by the divan as she lit a lamp. Buxton still lay there, but he was conscious now, propped up a little on one elbow. He held a gun in his hand, and Frank knew the foreman of the Lazy F had fired the first shot to strike Sandine.
We're all right. Jeff. Jeff saved us.
Frank smiled and nodded curtly.
Good to see that you made it, Buxton. I'd appreciate it if you didn't try to shoot me. In case you haven't figured it out by now, I'm on your side, not Sandine's.
Yeah, I reckon I could see that. And I think I've done all the shooting I can do for now.
Buck let the revolver slide from his fingers to lie on the divan beside him. Frank turned back toward the porch, and as he stepped out, he realized that the battle was over. Bodies littered the ranch yard, but most of them belonged to Sandine's hired gunfighters. Some of them had realized that the odds were turning against them and had surrendered. They stood now in a dispirited group, surrounded by a mixed force of Lazy F cowboys and armed citizens from San Remo. Tom Horn limped toward the house, a dark stain on the right leg of his trousers. Jasper Culverhouse and Mayor Donahue were with him. Donahue's left hand clutched his right arm where a bullet had torn through it. Frank grinned as he saw that Wolf was with them. The big cur was licking his chops, as if he had just feasted on a bad hombre or two.
Everybody all right in there?
Just fine, Tom. Except for Sandine. He's dead.
So are most of his men. He rode over here tonight for a cleanup, but he's the one who got cleaned.
How bad are you hit?
Oh, hell, this is just a scratch. Nothing to worry about. The mayor got ventilated worse than I did.
Give me your flesh wound. I'll be fine.
The way you were shouting orders and moving men around sounded to me like you've got some military experience, Mayor.
Him? Hell, he's just a Union general back during the Civil War, won a few medals for it. That's all.
Donahue had told Frank once not to judge him entirely by appearances. That had certainly turned out to be good advice. Wolf nuzzled Frank's leg. Frank reached down and petted him, roughing up the fur on the dog's head.
Yep, looks like I'm going to have my work cut out for me the next few days. A lot of coffins to build and plenty of burying to do.
Maybe so, but when the sun comes up in the morning, it'll be shining on a lot more peaceful range than it went down on tonight.
The menace that Ed Sandine had represented to this part of the territory had not been ended without paying a price. Two more of the Lazy F punchers were dead, as were Alonzo Hightower and Ben Desmond from San Remo. Several men from both groups had been wounded, a few of them badly. It would take a while for everybody to get over what had happened, Frank knew, but get over it they would. He was equally sure of that. These were frontier folk, and they had the sort of steel in them that might bend occasionally, but never break. The next day after the big dust-up at the Lazy F, Frank was sitting in the Mogollon Saloon with Tom Horn and Mayor Donahue. Hightower's widow had already said that she was going to keep the place open in honor of her husband's memory. Down the street, the Verde Saloon was locked up. Somebody had seen Jonah Speckler, who had worked there as a bartender, riding out of town before dawn with a good-sized carpet bag lashed to his saddle. Nobody knew when or if he would ever be back.
I was just down at Jasper's place.
Donahue had come into the saloon a few minutes earlier and joined Frank and Horn at the table.
It looks like Caleb Glover's gonna make it. He's getting stronger now instead of weaker. Of course, his cowboying days are over, but Jasper plans to make him some special crutches and maybe a wheelchair so he can still get around. Mary Elizabeth says once they're married, He can help her run the cafe.
What about that fella Buxton?
I rode out to the Lazy F this morning to check on things. Buxton's doing fine, except for an aching head. Laura Flynn is going to make him take it easy for a few days, but I suspect he'll be up and around before too long, running the ranch for her again.
We reckon there's going to be wedding bells for them, too?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Well, Bucky O'Neill ought to be here with a posse sometime late this afternoon. And since the range war's over, I reckon that'll be the end of my job as special deputy.
Well, Sheriff O'Neill will probably keep you on as a regular deputy.
Not interested. I've done enough lawing to suit me for a while. Thought I'd drift on up Wyoming or Montana way. Always lots going on up there.
A lot of trouble, you mean?
You and me, it seems to follow us, don't it, Morgan?
Frank just shrugged. He had long since come to accept his destiny. He was one of the last of the truly fast guns. It was something he would never escape until he drew his last breath.
So, you used to be a general?
Two figures in the doorway caught Frank's attention as his companions continued to talk. A pair of women stood there, looking over the bat wings into the saloon as if searching for someone. One was in her 40s, the other around 20, and both had red hair, long and flowing on the younger one, short and touched with gray on the older one. The resemblance between them was such that Frank knew right away they were mother and daughter. And to his surprise, he realized that they were both looking straight at him.
Excuse me, boys.
Frank walked over to the saloon entrance. The women moved back onto the boardwalk. Frank stepped outside and joined them, removing his hat as he did so.
Good afternoon, ladies. Something I can do for you?
Are you Mr. Frank Morgan?
Frank thought she was very attractive, although her daughter was more spectacularly beautiful.
Mr. Culverhouse told us we might find you here.
Yes, ma'am. Have we met?
No. My name is Alma Blake. This is my daughter, Tess. We just came down here from Flagstaff.
The names were familiar, but it took Frank a second to place them.
That young cowboy, Roof. He's your son.
Alma smiled sadly and nodded.
And Tess's brother. We received a letter from Howard Flynn about what happened to Roof and how you were the last one to speak to him. We came down here to visit his grave and to talk to you.
Mrs. Blake, Miss Blake, I'm mighty sorry for your loss. If it's any comfort, I can tell you that Roof was thinking of both of you there at the end. He seemed like a mighty fine young man.
He was. He was the finest brother anyone could want.
Tessa's mother held out a hand to Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. I'm grateful that my boy didn't have to be alone when he died.
Frank took her hand gently.
If you ever find yourself in Flagstaff, please stop and say hello. We run a boarding house there.
I'll sure do that, ma'am.
Frank had no intention of ever stopping in to see the two of them, despite the fact that Tess was lovely enough to take the breath away from any man, and Alma's more mature beauty was even more attractive to a man of Frank's years. But to them, he would always be the man who was there when Roof was killed, and he didn't figure they would need reminding of that. He shook hands with Tess, too, and then put his hat on and stood there to watch them walk away. They got into a buggy that was parked in front of Jasper Culverhouse's blacksmith shop and drove off, heading out to San Remo on the trail that led to Prescott, and on north to Flagstaff.
Lovely ladies.
Frank turned his head and saw a man he had never seen before standing on the boardwalk about 10 feet away. The stranger was tall and lean and dressed in black, and he had a small, black, leather-bound book of some sort in his left hand. He wrote something in it with a stub of pencil.
Frank Morgan.
That's my name. What business is it of yours, mister?
Just making a note of it.
The man closed the book and slipped it and the pencil into a pocket inside his long black coat.
I like to keep track of these things.
What things?
Oh, just the men I've killed.
The stranger crashed down on his back on the boardwalk, his unfired gun skittering away. As Horn and Donahue burst out of the saloon to see what the shot was about, Frank stepped to the stranger's side and stood over him. He had never seen this hombre before, but he knew what sort of man he was. A hired killer.
Who sent you after me? Who wants me dead?
Dutton. Charles.
That was all he got out before he died. But it was enough. The name hit Frank like a punch in the gut. Charles Dutton had been one of Vivian Browning's attorneys. Vivian,
Frank's first wife and his son Conrad's mother. The woman who had been cut down by an outlaw bullet because she'd been betrayed by a man she trusted, her own lawyer, Charles Dutton. Dutton was back east somewhere. Frank had intended to find him someday and settle the score for Vivian, one of the few women he had truly loved in his life. But other things had gotten in the way, and Dutton was still alive. Alive, and obviously worried enough about Frank Morgan seeking vengeance to hire a killer to go after him. Frank leathered his iron and knelt beside the dead man, reached inside the coat, and dug out the small leather-bound book. The man had bled on it as he died. Frank flipped through it, finding page after page of names, mostly men, but a few women, too. And these were all people the stranger had killed, Frank recalled. At least, that was what the snake-blooded bastard had claimed.
Who was he, Morgan?
I don't know.
Frank dropped the book on the planks next to the dead man.
He didn't tell me his name.
The stranger had taken pains to list all his victims, yet he had died with his own name unknown.
But why did he try to kill you?
To remind me that some chores are best not left undone.
Frank's hand lifted to the breast of his shirt and unpinned the marshal's badge he was still wearing. He handed it to Donahue and then turned away and headed for Culverhouse's stable. It was time to saddle Stormy, gather up Wolf, and move on. It was time for a showdown too long postponed. And behind Frank, a gust of wind blew across the boardwalk, fluttering through the blood-stained pages and the names in the black book.
The Last Gunfighter, The Devil's Legion is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2006, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Terrence Aselford, Amanda Thickpenny, Scott McCormick, Jonathan Watkins, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Nathan Bennett, Johann Detweiler, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Michael Glenn, Nanette Savard, and Dylan Lynch. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Timothy Lynch. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton. Original music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Title theme by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the series The First Mountain Man, as well as Smoke Jensen and Sidewinders, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
From the author of the critically acclaimed Elantris comes a beautifully crafted tale of dark intrigue, bitter rivalries, and powerful magic. In order to save his kingdom of Idris from certain annihilation, King Dedalan must honor a treaty made long ago. He must send his oldest daughter to marry Suzabron, the God King of Alondrin.
War is coming, Your Majesty. They will attack.
If we send her, Yarda,
We send her to her death.
Sending Vivenna is a poor plan, but it's our only plan.
Father, if we break this treaty, it will mean war. I am prepared to sacrifice for our people.
Lord God of Colors, forgive me. Vivenna, you will not go to wed the tyrant god of our enemies. I'm sending Ciri to your place.
Ciri, the youngest daughter of King Dedalus, soon finds herself plunged into a world of intrigue and politics, inhabited by undead gods and zombie armies. And she quickly learns that there is a darkness spreading through the highest order of Halandrin, threatening to consume all she loves.
Vessel, doing your duty as the vessel was the danger.
You have to tell me something.
You must not bear him a child. That is the danger. This all, everything here in the palace, is not what it appears to be.
Cursed with a lecherous form of magic which causes her to feed off the souls of the living, Princess Vivenna battles to save the life of her sister and prevent the war engine of Halandrin from crushing her homeland.
Your father and Lemix were right. The Halandrin have everything to lose by not attacking you.
I'm not going to become an Awakener, Dim. I might turn a blind eye toward that lifeless for now, but I will not awaken.
In the Court of the Gods, the highest authority in all of Halandrin, Lightsong the Bold, resurrected hero of ages since past, must come to grips with his newfound immortality as he struggles to unlock the dark secret of the Pantheon of Gods and their unstoppable armies of the undead.
What do they want of me, Larimar? Do they really think I'll do it? Lightsong the Selfish. Do they really think I'd give my life for one of them?
You offer hope, Your Grace. A last unlikely hope.
And if they're wrong, I have no desire to die. And why should it be otherwise? I mean, we have to die to heal one of them. We're gods to them only until they kill us.
And the key to halting the baying hounds of war may lie in the hands of the one man who wants to watch the world burn. Vasher, the Warbreaker.
You. Are you here to frame me?
No, Vahir. I'm here to kill you.
Don't miss Brandon Sanderson's high fantasy masterpiece, Warbreaker. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.